I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Andrew Fraser. This is Talk Central, episode 181 for the weekend starting 30 June 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, uncovering the Guptabot sock puppet network.
Also this week, Petya ransomware floors businesses worldwide. Was it a Russian cyber weapon?
Plus, MTN poaches Telkom's Jackie O'Sullivan and HD streaming coming to DStv Now.
Time to untangle the cables on another podcast.
Welcome to the show. How's it, guys?
How's it, Duncan?
Hi, Duncan.
Especially welcome to Andrew, who's joining us for the first time on Talk Central. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm a podcast virgin, so be gentle.
We'll go easy on you. I'm hoping, Andrew, this will be the first of many podcasts you do with us. And thanks so much for joining us. Andrew, of course, if our readers and listeners don't recognize the name, has contributed some interesting pieces just recently. In fact, he did a long, very detailed and very good piece on the mess that is the digital migration in South Africa a couple of weeks back now. Very well researched, I thought, and a subject you know intimately.
I don't know so much about well researched. I've just lived through it.
Yes.
It's been a quarter of my life has been spent on this.
Yes, well, living through something, I suppose, makes you an expert at it. But we're not going to talk DTT today. I think we've exhausted that subject over the months and years. We're going to talk instead about lots of interesting things, including some digging and research you've been doing on the Guptabot sock puppets on Twitter. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that. But before we jump into the news and discuss everything that's going on in South Africa and technology at the moment, we should do our quiz.
Indeed. First question. Blue Label Telecom said this week it'll buy which handset distributor for 1.9 billion rand?
South Africa's two new stock markets are engaged in a legal brawl. What are they called?
Our third question this week, Cell C has a new chief financial officer. Who is he? And for a bonus point, who is he replacing?
The fourth question, former SABC COO Claudie Motsoeneng this week asked congregants of a church in Katlehong to pray that what happens?
And let's pray it doesn't happen.
Yeah, let's pray it doesn't happen.
And fifth question, state-owned airline SAA's board reportedly wants which Vodacom executive as its new CEO?
That's our quiz. As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But let's jump into our discussion of the news. And certainly the Guptas have been in the news this week for various reasons. I think there have been a number of further major revelations from people like the Daily Maverick and their investigative unit, and also the what's the other one called?
Amabungani,
yes, yeah. Thank you. The revelations from the leaked emails, of course, coming out on almost a daily basis now. Quite troubling, I thought, this week was the demonstration that emerged outside Peter Bruce's house in Parkview in Johannesburg, organized by Black First, Land First, who seemed to be in the pay of the Guptas. They came to the Guptas' defense when there was the anti-Zuma marches, the anti-Gupta marches a few months back. But, Andrew, we need to talk tech on the show, and while I'd love to talk the politics around this, you've been doing some interesting investigation around Twitter and the Guptas and the Gupta bots, as they're called, that have been surfacing. Well, they've been around for a while, but you've been doing some digging into who might be behind them and what they're doing and how they're interlinked. Tell us a bit about why you decided to do that and what you've uncovered.
I think part of the advantage of being a freelancer and occasionally underemployed is you get a bit of time to do things that are just interesting. And over the past couple of years, actually, I've been quite interested in the fact that there seems to be it's pretty plain that's the case now, but there seems to be a kind of an underground group of bots supporting and basically commenting on anything to do with the Guptas, anything to do with any negativity that comes out about the Guptas. There was immediate reaction from a number of Twitter accounts. And to be honest, this probably started 18 months ago. I started just collecting the names, the handles of these accounts and putting it into a little Twitter list. And
right.
Every time I saw one, I just put it into the list. And over a period, I gathered probably about 80 or 90 of these mostly fake accounts. I mean, they're right. Blatantly fake, you know, with kind of 40 followers, which turned out to be the other bots.
Oh, right.
And, and they tend to follow just random accounts. But it kind of ratcheted up a little bit over the last couple of weeks. I think particularly around the time that the WMC leaks fake news website came out, there was kind of a ramping up. And I noticed people like Max Dupree were complaining that he had literally hundreds and hundreds of new followers that were following him, all created on the same day, all with very, very limited profiles. Just basically, I think at one stage he was saying he was getting 500 or 600 new followers every day. And they were just these obvious fake accounts. So I started just digging into it to see, you know, what is going on. So the first thing I did was I wanted to map the accounts that I'd identified. These are the accounts that are actually active. So that they were either retweeting, they were using certain hashtags, they were building up the voice of whoever was talking against about WMC or Peter Bruce or all of these kind of things. And I wanted to map it out, so I did a bit of research. I'm not a social media specialist or anything like that, so I started looking for some tools that I could kind of map this out. I found a tool that exists, which is called Node Excel.
Fantastic piece of software.
Unfortunately, if you want to do the Twitter stuff, you need to pay a license, and I'm cheap, so... I wasn't prepared to pay the $75 a month to pay
a month.
The license. So I put out a twiggle. I said, is there anybody out there that could build me a map?
Yeah.
And one of the guys that was involved in the Node Excel project, a guy by the name of Mark Smith from Connected Action in the US, contacted me and said, show me the list. And literally 25 minutes later, he said, here are your maps.
Oh, wow.
And those maps, which I think if you go to Daily Maverick, I think they're posted on there, just basically shows the kind of activity on the accounts. It shows what these bots are talking about, where they are, how they're connected to each other. But it does also show that you start to figure out how the network is built.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that there's probably, I'm guessing, three separate nodes, three separate people that are involved in this thing.
Yeah.
And they have a kind of an army of bots that each of them has. And they cross over between each other, but there are kind of three definite nodes that you can actually see of these fake accounts and fake Twitter. And then I was trying to figure out why they're doing it. Because... They tend to be kind of self-referential. They're only talking to themselves. There's no real interaction where they're going to change anybody's mind. They're not going to be able to create a narrative within Twitter because, you know, for the most part, it's quite inept what they're doing. It's quite transparent. And as I say, they're kind of self-referential. So there's probably 5 or 6 accounts that produce quite a lot of content that actually do interact with other Twitter users. But the majority of these accounts just retweet memes and content. And I think that the only kind of reason that I can think that they're actually doing it is just to drive hashtags to trend. So they'll put out a hashtag like Cheetah Peter, which is the Peter Bruce defamation kind of concept. And the whole idea is just to repeat that hashtag often enough so it starts to trend so that they can
be noticed.
They can be noticed and that narrative can get out there. And I suppose to an extent that might work. I'm not sure how successful it is, but it's definitely not something. This is not amateur. There's somebody spending money on this. I mean, they're inept and they're not very good at what they're doing. But this is paid. This is definitely.
It's somebody that doesn't quite understand what botnet was capable of, trying to implement it with some money and a paid for service online, probably.
Yeah, I think, you know, we call it a botnet. It's not really a botnet.
It's real people. Behind
these are real. These are real people. This is just somebody with TweetDeck and 500 fake accounts, or an IFTTT script that automatically retweets a particular message. I don't think we should. I don't think there's somebody there that's programmed a proper bot that's reacting and doing things. These are people.
You can pay for these services online these days, I'm sure.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, I call it a Gupta bot, but just in the terms of that they always say the same things. Not really that it's automated. I think this is largely just huge amounts of fake followers, and we're going to see more because, as I say, there's a whole new kind of group that are coming into the market that you're going to be seeing now.
Do you think the acceleration in the activity of these bots, Gupta bots, for want of a better word, was a direct result of the email leaks that we saw a few weeks ago?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. I mean, there's no question. I mean, and the same thing with the WMC leaks, the defamation against Peter Bruce. Mm. They've been attacking some of the journalists quite openly. So yeah. Ferial Hafiji and a couple of others have been attacked very openly. The story of the Rupert controlled media. That kind of narrative has been out there for a while. Mm. But we see it ramp up quite strongly. So you saw the immediate reaction a physical reaction to Peter Bruce's opinion piece this week.
Yes.
That's kind of just the physical manifestation of what we've seen online over the last 3 or 4 months, I think. Mm. And it definitely ramped up with the Gupta leaks. Mm. The point is, I'm not sure that it's necessarily doing them any good. I think, if anything, it's probably harming them, because it's so blatantly propaganda. It's not true.
But like the WM leaks website, which is just so obviously.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not sure who they're trying to fool. To be honest with you,
maybe themselves.
Yeah, I like to think that South Africans have got some critical thought.
Well, that's what happens when you lose a Bell and Pottinger account. You know, the quality of your PR campaign goes out the window.
Yeah, so I'm quite interested in. I mean, there've been sock puppets around the Guptas for a while now. You know, this is not something that's happened in the last year. You know, we go back to Conor Mead's website, which was like a blatant Gupta supporting website. You know, the truth about the Guptas and how they employed, I don't know, pick a number,
thousands.
People in South Africa. And how these guys were, you know, part of the black empowerment in South Africa, you know, that whole narrative. Mm. I've got a feeling that was probably Bell Pottinger's idea at the time.
Yeah, and now maybe continued by
some. Yeah, so what's happening now is probably the same kind of concept. That was kind of obviously propaganda, but it was probably a little bit more sophisticated than the stuff we're seeing now.
I wonder what it's perhaps veering off the technology subject again, but I wonder what this really says about how desperate the Guptas are getting if they're resorting to this sort of tactic to smear their rivals or smear their critics rather.
I think that's all they have. I don't think there's really any other defense.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, they'll always say, you know, we've never been charged. You know, but they've never tried to sue anybody for defamation either.
Mm.
You know, I think it's reaching the point now where these claims have to be tested in court. There's no question. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when and who.
Yeah. And I heard Zuma speaking at the ANC policy conference this afternoon, criticizing the courts and saying that they're the enemy of the people. I think they're only the enemy of our president. But coming back to the tech side of this, I mean, how far can we pursue the social media sock puppets? I mean, can we find out who's behind them?
I think it's hard. When you take a social network like Facebook, for example, Facebook is. It's harder to create anonymous accounts in Facebook. Mm. It's more difficult. It's not impossible, but it's more difficult. And the time taken to do it is long. Whereas Twitter, you can automate that process.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really simple to create them. And there's a thriving industry in the subcontinent, Indian subcontinent, of producing fake followers, you know, people that sell them. So I think it's a measure of. Some of the things that are great about Twitter is that you can create an anonymous account. You know, it's great to have a second account that you can use. And it's not tied to you. So I'm, I think that's just one of those things. Mm. It's difficult. The other thing is that, that Twitter doesn't really give you any information other than the username. So you can use the API and you can find out what was used to create the tweet and that kind of thing, but you can't find out IP addresses or see if you're getting multiple messages from exactly the same IP address or track down where it's coming from directly on Twitter. So yeah, I don't think there's really that much we can do except just keep monitoring it and seeing what it looks like.
What intrigued me in looking at some of those sock puppet accounts was the names were clearly chosen at random as well. I mean, they clearly chose South African names, but then you'd have an Afrikaans first name and a Zulu second name, for example.
Yeah,
it's as if they put no thought into it whatsoever.
So a week ago, before we saw some of those interesting ones, there were a whole bunch that tweeted a whole lot of stuff, and they all had cricketers' names, but it was kind of the Proteas, one first name from one Protea and the surname of another.
Huh?
I think that also hints that it was created in the Indian subcontinent, because you know it was cricket. but these ones, obviously they just plugged in. Built a script that pulled South African names and then just mixed and matched the first names and the surnames. Yesterday, however, I found a whole bunch of new ones with Spanish names. So obviously they've run out of South African names.
Unique South African names. Look, for a good server for $5 on Fiverr, you can probably get somebody to create you 10 accounts or so. Maybe that's what they did, you know, send a list and just go through it.
So, I mean, they definitely bought these. I mean, these are all, if you go through and you look at the accounts, I pulled some of them across Twitter's API, and literally you can see that they were generated within seconds of each other. Mm. You know, they were all on the same day within seconds that the accounts were generated. Mm. So, I mean, it's they're obviously fake.
Yes.
They're not even trying that hard to hide the fact that they're fake.
I mean, it's just amateurish. I mean, it's like that website. I mean, was it the Daily Maverick who was able to determine who were the author behind it
was? Yeah, it was actually one of the Daily Maverick's readers that did it. A guy by the name of, I think, Jean de Touet,
who
actually dug up that information, went in and looked at some of the metadata within the WordPress site that they were using and identified the name of the person that had actually created the site.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and that is fairly amateur. I mean, that's the quality that you get from some of the IT staff in South Africa, I suppose.
I still want to know who leaked the emails. It has to have been an internal employee. Carried a server out one weekend or something.
I mean, that's a lot of data. I mean, they're talking about 200,000 odd emails.
200 or 300 giga, I seem to recall. Yeah. It's not something you just upload onto the internet. It's probably a machine you put under your arm and take out a building.
Well, yeah, it might have been a hack. I mean, it could have, you know, if you've been hacked, you can, that stuff streams out slowly.
That's
so,
true.
You know, over 3 months, you pull out all the information.
That's true.
I'm fairly sure that if it was a hack, the breach has been closed now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I just changed the password to 34567.
Anyway. Fun and games. It's an interesting time to be living in this country, that's for sure. But let's go a bit further afield and let's talk about cyber security and this Petya ransomware, which spread like wildfire over the course of this week. It seems to have started in the Ukraine, related apparently to accounting software that's popular in the region, MEDocs. That became infected, I think, through an update, or was infected, and then they put out the update, and then it infected a range of computers.
Does depend who you talk to. According to MEDocs, not a chance was
them.
We know nothing.
And then, of course, it spread all over the world. It's some big multinational companies were badly affected by this. Maersk, the big shipping company, was particularly hard hit. But also FedEx and I think it's TNT Express, their global subsidiary, which was affected by this. And I believe their South African office was also affected badly. The global TNT Express operations were affected badly by this particular piece of malware. But Andrew, you've been reading some interesting stuff and about how this might in fact have been the Russians may have in fact possibly been behind this.
Yeah, maybe allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
we covered that, yeah. Okay. I
think so. Putin didn't necessarily do it.
Yeah. No, well, I was reading up, I saw the information out last week that there'd been another ransomware attack after that massive WannaCry earlier, which was flouted by a 19-year-old who discovered that you could switch it off by just
registering
a domain.
Fantastic.
Maybe the Guptas were behind that one.
Anyhow, so after that, I mean, and WannaCry was widespread. I mean, it went across the world really, really quickly. I mean, it took down some of the NHS servers in the UK. Mm. There were a number of times it was found in South Africa as well. But as I say, you know, once the kill switch was tripped, it stopped spreading. And the difference between kind of WannaCry and this one is that WannaCry seemed to try very, very hard to propagate. It was externally focused. It was trying to move across networks as much as possible. This other new, what they call a new variant of Petya, or which what some of the guys called not Petya, or GoldenEye, uses some of the same methods as WannaCry, but it doesn't seem as focused on propagation in terms of external propagation. It's really focused on working within networks. So I was reading a couple of things, one of them on Axios.com, and mentioned there that what everybody's calling ransomware, and the fact they're calling it ransomware is because obviously there's a screen that says pay us $3,000 worth of Bitcoin or whatever it was. Mm. They said that it seems that it isn't really ransomware. It looks like a wiper as opposed to an encryptor. It looks like it's designed rather to cripple systems rather than to try and get some money to.
So disguised as ransomware.
Yeah, it's kind of a false flag, you know.
Something altogether more malicious.
Yeah.
Can't see how your files are being deleted because it's being encrypted at the same time.
And and the other thing is that they say that the quality of the code in this one is far superior to what was in WannaCry. You know, WannaCry was effectively one of the first examples of what they called RWAAS, ransomware as a service, where you could actually rent the ransomware on the dark net. You could go and buy it and pay somebody and then implement your own one. So they said that this one is much more focused on actually closing down computers, corrupting them, and making them useless. Mm. That you actually have to start from scratch. And what the argument that kind of comes out of this is something that I think his name's Alan Greenberg from Wired wrote an article a week before this broke, saying that the Ukraine particularly is kind of a testing ground for Russian cyber ops because they're effectively at war. There's nothing you can really complain about because they're at war, so you know anything goes. And he's saying that there's so much activity by Russian hackers, state-sponsored hackers in the Ukraine, where they've taken down electricity networks, they've taken down their pension fund, they attacked their police force. This ransomware seemed to be very focused on the Ukraine, and it's really focused on key kind of companies within the Ukraine.
It was, I think, more than 80% of all incidents related to this piece of malware occurred
within
Ukraine.
Within the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that because this wasn't focused on propagation, it looks like it was targeted at those Ukrainian things. So the other companies that have been affected, people like Maersk and DHL, and there are, I think there were two or three others, there are a couple locally, those are probably just they weren't targeted, you know, they were just happened to be infected with the same kind of thing. And the whole point of the thing claiming to be ransomware with a very, very amateurish kind of email-based ransom solution, which was shut down by the German email operator immediately.
Yeah.
So if you do get this, you can never pay the ransom. Yeah. Well, you can pay the ransom, but you're never going to get a code to decrypt your hard drive. It's really the real goal of this was to destroy and damage, not to try and make some money.
Mm. I seem to recall that the Americans very firmly blamed WannaCry on the North Koreans. I don't think there was ever any definitive proof of that. But it's interesting that this one is potentially pointing the way of the Russians.
It is easier to blame the North Koreans rather than
because they can't really respond, and no one believes them anyway.
Yeah, well, you know, Eternal Blue was done by the NSA. You know, that was the key issue of WannaCry. That's how it worked.
Yes.
So you know, the NSA knew about that for how many years,
and
didn't tell Microsoft to patch it.
Yes.
So I would take whatever they say with a pinch of salt. You know. I think it's very easy to say it was the North Koreans that did this or this.
Mm-hmm.
And likewise, we're saying this is the Russians. Likewise, it's really easy to blame the Russians for anything now because they have done some stuff, so
you
just blame them for every new thing that comes along. But as I read about it, it sounds quite plausible that this is the case.
There is so much disinformation in this area, though. It's so hard to know who to believe.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, misinformation.
Also, some of the big antivirus guys are Russian, so who do you believe?
Yeah, those Kaspersky guys. I mean, they've got some of the best minds in the world, but whose side are they fighting for? That's another good question.
Anyway, we need to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox Fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox Fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm here with Rechot and Andrew today. And interesting move this week. Jackie O'Sullivan, who joined Telkom, I think it was about 3 years ago now, as head of corporate communications, announced that she is going to be moving to the yellow team, MTN. I thought it a very interesting move. You know, Telkom has done well in the last few years. I think we all complain about them and their services, etc. But from an operational point of view, they've done well. Their share prices tripled, quadrupled over the last 3 or 4 years since Sipho Maseko took over back in, I think it was April 2013. And he assembled a very good team around him. Former CIO of Nedbank, for example, is running their IT operations, Len de Villiers. They had Enzo Scarsello, who appointed as chief marketing officer. Of course, Enzo has also gone to MTN now as chief operating officer of the South African group. But he has built a good team around him. But it's interesting now to see first Enzo moving across to MTN, and now Jackie O'Sullivan going across. MTN, of course, has got a completely new management team compared to just a year ago. They have a new CEO in the form of Godfrey Modso, who of course was poached from Vodacom. Vodacom was very unhappy about that and launched court action to stop him from working for MTN South Africa until a restraint of trade agreement expired. Fair enough, I guess. But he's heading up the South African operation now, and he's clearly building quite a powerful team around him. So he's got Enzo, who I think originally was at Vodacom and was responsible for those baby ads that Vodacom did, which were so popular.
I think Enzo might have a royal flush by now. I think he might have worked for everybody.
Quite possibly. But it's interesting to see all these movements in the industry. Certainly a lot of chopping and changing, a lot of executives moving between operators. Quite a fluid situation. I wonder what it says about Telkom, first of all, that Jackie O'Sullivan, their I guess I can call her their chief spin doctor, is leaving to join the opposition, and what it says about MTN South Africa that Godfrey is assembling this what looks like quite a powerful team around him.
Dream team.
What does it tell us is are Telkom's fortunes potentially starting to wane a bit? Is MTN, which has obviously been through a nightmarish time over the last few years, not just in Nigeria, but they've also had a lot of troubles here in South Africa. I think they've had 5 or 6 CEOs over just as many years. Are they finally finding some stability at MTN? Are we going to see them starting to claw back some of the market share that they've lost to Vodacom and to Cell C in particular? I don't know. It's interesting to see these top execs moving and you know, speculate a bit about what might be driving those decisions.
I think Jackie moving is a good move for MTN. I mean, she's an excellent spin doctor, as you say.
Yes.
She's great. And she went to Telkom when they had, I think she was at AXA before that.
Sasol. She was at Sasol, yeah.
She went to Telkom when their public persona was pretty poor.
They
looked bad. They had a kind of a weak position. And I think when she went across there, she did a very, very good job in terms of controlling the narrative, selling the story of what they were trying to do.
And it was a hard story to sell.
It was a difficult story to sell. I think, you know what, when you pay some dividends to the shareholders, they buy into it.
Yeah, that's true. Ordinary customers are harder.
It's much difficult for the average consumer. And I think MTN is in a very similar place to where Telkom was. MTN is it's really got a quite a poor
reputation
at the moment. It doesn't help that there's too many users they're seen as profiteering. In terms of, you know, the data must fall kind of story and things like that. So
I see they were in the news again this week over their data, over their roaming charges and customers burnt over that.
Yeah, with Catherine Pillay, who made quite a bit of noise. Look, to be fair, I think for once it's not their fault. I think, you know, roaming charges are set by the third party, the other network. But it is true. It is something that they should address.
Yeah, but you're right about Telkom. There's been a change in perception. I think there's still a lot of negativity around Telkom amongst ordinary consumers, but certainly amongst shareholders, there's been an improvement, as you say. But I think also amongst consumers, I think I've certainly noticed that Telkom's culturally has changed. They're not as holier than thou, you know, we own the market, it's our way or the highway attitude from them anymore.
I think you have to thank Enzo for that.
Yeah.
I think he brought in a very they weren't a consumer-focused business before. Yeah. They were a monopoly that sold people something that you couldn't get anywhere else. When he went there, the stuff that he introduced in terms of, especially on the mobile side and on the fixed LTA side, those kind of messages that they put out there were very pro-consumer. They were good products. They were valued. I think their marketing was human. Mm. It worked very, very well. And I think that's had a difference. Look, to be honest with you, you still don't want to try and get hold of the Telkom call center.
True.
You don't want to go to a Telkom shop and try and get service. I mean, it's still horrendous. But likewise, you don't want to do that with MTN either.
Yeah. True.
I have seen in Telkom shops a lot fuller these days. I've walked past a few in the last few days, and there were a lot of people in, a lot more than I remember.
I actually use that as a yardstick for how well these guys are doing. And I was walking through Cresta the other day, and I know it's not scientific, but I was walking through Cresta the other day, and they've got all the shops there. I walked past Vodacom first. In fact, Vodacom's got two stores in Cresta. They were both packed. I then walked past the Cell C store. It was packed. I then walked past the MTN store. It was empty. Right. I walked past the Telkom store. It was packed.
Yeah. Look, I'll be honest with you. I think that the Telkom store is packed also because
they're slow.
Their systems are incredibly slow. That it takes an hour to serve each customer.
That's true.
But I agree with you. You walk past an MTN store, they are tumbleweeds.
Yeah. And that used to be the case with Cell C. I quite often go to the Northgate Shopping Centre, and the Cell C shop there used to be like that, tumbleweeds, no one in the store. Mm-hmm. That changed about 18 months ago when they cut their prices and became much more aggressive in the market. Maybe it was 2 years ago now already. Mm-hmm. And that store's been busy since then. But you're right, MTNs now are empty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also the stock they carry. I mean, as a customer, I do pop in there from time to time, very, very rarely. But yeah, the stuff they have on the shelves are just dilapidated.
Not what you want.
It's stale. Everything in their shop seems a bit stale. I think it's time for them to really take it up a notch.
Yeah. I know they are. Them. They are. Well, certainly Mteto Nyati, before he resigned to go be the CEO of Ultron, was talking about revamping all of those MTN stores. I'm not an MTN customer, so I don't actually go into them, so I can't comment on that. But it would be interesting to know if there are improvements happening in those stores. When was the last time you were in an MTN retail store?
No, I walked past them from time to time, like I said, and you can kind of see, you know, the stuff that's on the shop. But I think about a month ago, I was in one looking for, you know, second sim and stuff. Yeah. And the service was slow. It wasn't ideal. It wasn't the same that it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
There's definitely been a decline.
Yeah. Yeah, these companies have become, I mean, they've become like Telkom. They're big in lumbering. You have to manage them very carefully, otherwise you end up with poor service.
I have a particular view on telcos in particular, and, yeah. and Vodacom is probably slightly different in terms of that they're much better managed. But in general, you know, in the 90s when cell phones were launched, no, they never expected the kind of successes that they had. And they made absolute fortunes for doing nothing.
Mm. Yeah.
For a long period, their return on investment was massive. And I think they came to expect that as the norm. Mm-hmm. And it's not the norm. You know, they were just right time, right place. They had a technology that took off. And then kind of from maybe 2005, 2006 onwards, the market became tougher. It became more difficult, saturation, you know, that kind of stuff. And they just don't seem to be able to shift with the market. Mm-hmm. They still think that they're entitled to make so much money.
They became fat and lazy.
Yeah, this is the way it is. You know, they became that kind of fat cat monopoly kind of organization. And you have to be nimble. And I think that's the great thing about what I think Telkom has done is that they've been quite nimble. They've kind of poked the bear a little bit in terms of doing something a little bit different.
Certainly their freemium plans have been very aggressive.
Yeah.
Hugely popular.
I think hugely successful.
It's interesting. And I mean, you would never expect it of a former or still partially state-owned monopoly to be able to turn itself around like that. But Sipho Maseko seems to have managed to take this thing by the horns and do something with it, which is quite remarkable, actually, if you consider what the culture was like there before you arrived.
Yeah, yeah. We actually want to be customers of Telkom again in some way, shape, or form, as opposed to not, you know, with the DSL era.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I had to choose between Telkom and Vimatel, I would still choose Vimatel for my favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
But on mobile, you know, Telkom is an interesting proposition.
Well, I'm a Vodacom subscriber. I've been a Vodacom subscriber for 25 years, and I'm seriously considering saying, you know what, enough already.
Mm.
I'll just port to.
I did it last year
to Telkom.
I was on Vodacom for 20 years, and I ported to Telkom.
Sure. Just because the value proposition that it offers is so much better.
Yes.
And I'm fairly sure that if I do it, I'll be disappointed in certain aspects of the service and the coverage compared to what I get on Vodacom. But it's a matter of saying, you know, is it worth some inconvenience in order to get better value?
If you spend most of your time in the city, then you're not going to have a coverage issue. It's when you go outside the city and then it's the phone is switching over to roaming on MTN that you might have some challenges. But and also there's no roaming on 4G, so if you're out of the city, you're on 3G or 2G. But if you spend the bulk of your time, if you don't travel a lot outside of Joburg, for example, it's not, you know, the telecom coverage in the cities is actually quite good. I had a very interesting podcast a couple of days ago with Graham Cumming, who is head of digital media at DSTV. Well worth going to have a listen to that podcast. We had a wide-ranging chat about what DSTV is doing in the streaming world, and we spoke about their relationship with Showmax and what they're doing with DSTV Now. For those who don't know, DSTV Now is DSTV's streaming product. And I kind of feel it's always been treated as a bit of a second cousin inside MultiChoice. You know, it's only ever been in standard definition. It's been a bit difficult to use, although it has become easier over time. And they've added things like AirPlay and Chromecast support. But it's still in standard definition. What Graham said to me this week was they're going to be launching an HD version, starting with the sports channels. And then progressing to the general entertainment channels later. We don't know what type of HD this is, whether it's going to be 720p or 1080p or 1080i or 4K, doubt that. But they are talking about taking this HD quite soon. I know that a lot of customers, and I think, Andrew, you one of them, have had a frustrating experience with DSTV Now. A lot of buffering. I've certainly encountered buffering in the past. Lately, it seems to have become more stable for me.
Yeah, I think the announcement that I would have liked to have heard is that they're going to disengage it from the satellite business completely, so that you could buy it separately. But I'm guessing that's going to take a while. I just think that, you know what, I'm a Netflix subscriber, and I mean, I know they're the leaders and they're but the fact of the matter is that it is seamless. You know, Netflix has the correct content delivery network in place. You know, doesn't matter what it is, you get a great response. You get no buffering. I mean, assuming you have enough bandwidth, you get no buffering. The quality is fantastic. And both with Showmax and with DSTV now, it's not quite as good. You know, it really is. You get buffering. I found you find lower resolution at inopportune times. Lost frames, particularly. You know, so they say they're going to go to HD for sport. I would prefer that they stayed in SD and just improved the frame rate.
Okay.
because I think that that's really the issue. Is what happens is that the frame rate drops down to kind of 20 frames a second.
Right.
Which is kind of acceptable, and each frame looks fine, but the ball seems to move rather erratically. So I'm glad that they're talking about going to HD. I just hope that they're building on their content delivery network, that they're investing some money in the ISPs to actually make sure that, you know, when the Springboks are playing, that the stream doesn't die because there's just too many people accessing it.
Hopefully they'll throw more bandwidth. I mean, they'll have to with the HD stream. You know, they'll have to throw more bandwidth, and that should, in theory, support the SD streaming guys as well.
They've got to put the. I think Andrew's right. They've got to put the CDN in the right place.
And I think that's really the issue. You can't service a whole country. I mean, even a relatively small country like South Africa, you can't stream to a whole country from one kind of server farm. Because there's just too many links in the chain. You need to have those content delivery networks out there. And even if that's just taking the pressure off the non-live stuff, the catch-up stuff, so that the live stuff has got bandwidth. But, you know, if some people are watching Game of Thrones, you know, you've got people watching Game of Thrones and all the other catch-up stuff at the same time, you've got a sporting event, you are going to have bandwidth issues. You know, that's just a fact. And it's an art to build these networks. And I think that the advantage that DSTV now and Showmax have is that they can learn from the guys that went before them.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that they're making sufficient investment to make it worthwhile. Because if the experience is poor, they'll lose customers faster than they gain customers.
Yeah. As a standalone product, I actually asked him that question, and he said it's definitely on the roadmap, but no timing now, obviously. So probably I would guess a couple of years still, but the idea is that at some point in the future you won't need a satellite dish to watch DSTV.
I think that part of it is their licensing regime, you know, the way that they pay for their licenses and buy their licenses, which is why you'll see certain of their programs aren't available, or channels aren't available on DSTV now. And I think that's just the licensing regime that they have. And it all comes down to the lawyers at the end of the day.
It does, yeah. In fact, they have to negotiate with every channel individually to go from SD to HD. Graham was saying that if it's, you know, once one of them goes, they all tend to come on board. I was quite pleased to see that the news channel ENCA is going to be launching on DSTV now shortly, because often I'm sitting at my desk and there's a major news event happening. I'd like to actually see I'd like to stream it to my desk. And that's ENCA is a good channel, and I'm certainly not going to watch
ANZ. ANN 7 is available on YouTube
for free.
Damn, what have I been missing out on? The SABC is on there, and the coverage is, especially since the departure of the King,
it's surprisingly good.
Yeah, indeed. The King. Speaking of the King, we'll get back to him a bit later in our quiz results. But that covers the news this week. Guys, I meant to discuss the winner and loser this week before we started recording, I completely forgot to do so. So maybe I should just I came up with some ideas beforehand, so maybe by default they should be out.
Yeah, I think they're strong.
Unless you guys have something specific you'd like to raise. I'm proposing that our winner this week is F&B for announcing that their smartphone app is going to be zero rated on all networks. In other words, you won't use any data, or you won't pay for any data, or it won't come off your cap if you're using the app, which is pretty cool. Well done, F&B. I'm sure all the other banks are going to follow suit. And our loser this week, following on from our detailed discussion about it earlier, is the Gupta bots.
I guess, or just the Guptas.
Or just the Guptas.
Just the Guptas.
Just the Guptas.
Loser the.
And their Gupta bots. And their sock puppets. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So, you know, I try to keep things in the spirit of bots and bot networks. And I came across this really cool and very inspiring website that I'm sure you'll both agree with me. It's called inspirobot.me. And it's an attempt to create artificial intelligence that will spew out motivational quotes for you. But it doesn't get it right most of the time. So you guys can't see it, but it looks like a hell from 2020 or 2010.
Yes.
Can you see that? And you just basically auto-generate a quote, click the button, and the gem it is giving us is, feel that you're bangable. Let people know that you're fine. Understand that you're persistent. I don't know what that means.
Hey, this is a family-friendly podcast.
Oh, it's bangible.
Yeah. Bangible.
Here's another one. When we give up our power to smother law and order, we also give up our power to become part of a scare tactics. Very cryptic, yeah.
I think this is a great website to fire up after you've had a few beers.
Yeah, exactly.
Website, a kind of a bot website, which produces Deepak Chopra quotes, which are you cannot tell the difference between them and the real thing. I mean, they're just as meaningless as the real thing.
Brilliant. Walk long and hard with bare feet, that type of thing.
Andrew, you've brought two picks this week.
Yeah. The first one is I've been writing something on the South African InfoSec outfit Thinkst this week. Hopefully it'll be published once it gets error-checked, because I'm not in the InfoSec space, so sure. It's being error-checked at the moment. So Thinkst, they produced the Canary device. I think it's been featured on Tech Central before, which is a kind of a honeypot device.
Mm.
They're about to release two new versions. One is a cloud version of the Canary, and the other one is a virtual machine version of the Canary, which you can roll out in a network. It's really interesting stuff. The honeypot stuff, it's something I had to learn about this week. It's really, really quite clever. And my second pick is the Nokia Android devices.
Oh, yes.
I'm really impressed with the with the stuff from Nokia. I wasn't a fan of the 3310. I think that's a bit of a gimmick.
Yeah.
But the Nokia Android devices, the 3, 5, and 6, not so much the 3, which is really an entry-level device, but I'm a big fan of kind of mid-range devices that deliver real value. And the Nokia 5 and 6 are really good value for what they offer.
That 6 in particular, I mean, it's 3999, I think. And
it's about 4,000.
Wow, that's good.
About 4,000 Rand. Look, it's a strictly middle-of-the-road device.
Yeah.
It has a Qualcomm Snapdragon 430.
Okay. Middle of the road is fine for most people. I mean, for geeks who chase the biggest and baddest.
Yeah, look, if you're not gaming, to be honest with you,
you'll
probably find that it'll do the job. But it's a nice device. It's well priced. The great thing for me is that they're using the SoC they're using, that Qualcomm chip, plus the fact that they use a very, very much a stock Android experience.
Mm. It is stock Android, yeah. I think.
I'm sure they've added a couple of things to it. But
apparently not.
But it's effectively stock Android.
Apparently not. Apparently it is just stock Android. Yeah.
So the great news about that is that means that your upgrades are very likely. You know? So when you move from the next one is from Nougat to what is it? Oreo, I suppose.
They haven't announced it yet.
I'm guessing it's going to be Oreo because Nabisco will pay them for that. It is Nabisco. Anyway.
They probably won't call it Oros.
Yeah. So when you go to Android O, the chances are that there's going to be an upgrade, and when they go to Android P, there'll be an upgrade.
Yeah.
If it's not from Nokia themselves, it'll be from the community. So you know the guys, because it's much easier for them to just hack the stock Android onto the device.
Mm.
I must say the Nokia 3, that probably won't be the case because that's using a MediaTek processor.
Now, I went to the launch about 10 days ago now and played around with all of the devices, and they're fantastic. That Nokia 6 in particular impressed me. It was, just running, opening app, closing apps and playing with the device. It felt like a high-end phone.
I'll be honest with you. They're not the only phone that's out there in that, right? There are a lot of mid-range phones in that 4,000, 5,000 Rand price bracket that are genuinely fantastic devices.
But they're not running stock Android.
They mostly not. Part. Well, the Motos are, but the rest of them aren't. Mm. So You know, it's quite an interesting place. You know, I think it's the most exciting part of smartphones at the moment. It's actually not the bleeding edge 15,000 rand phones, but in that kind of 5,000-6,000 rand level, where you've got some real value, really quality products.
Yeah. And those are the sort of devices that were the premium phones 2 years ago, years ago.
Yeah, well, functionality now, I mean, it's a 430. As opposed to an 835 is the latest Qualcomm device. They're definitely not as fast. They don't have the same graphics capabilities and things like that. But for everyday use, what people are actually using their device for, which is messaging
and browsing and
you know, mobile gaming to an extent, it's fine. It's not you don't really need any more. You know, not everybody's going to plug their thing into a monitor and use it as a portable PC. You know, it's a phone.
Yeah, who does that? Even with that feature enabled.
Yeah. Although that Samsung Dex is pretty cool. I haven't used it, though. my pick this week is a little app called Relive. Actually, Richard, you're going to love this thing. You must check it out.
I have seen it. You've seen it. Fantastic.
Brilliant. Hey, it works with Strava, Garmin Connect, and Polar Flow at the moment. And all it does is I connect it to my Strava. I think regular listeners to the show will know, I'm a big trail runner. And as soon as you finish an event, within 30 minutes of you finishing the event, the Relive app then pops up a notification saying we've got an overview of your run. And they pull data out, I think it's out of Google Earth, and they create a video using Google Earth of where you've run, where you've stopped, and then when you take a photograph on the run, for example, or on your cycle or whatever it'll pop up the picture at that point, and it's expertly done. Really, really cool app. If you're a regular runner or cyclist or whatever sport you do, Relive is fantastic. It works on Android. I think it's available for iOS as well. Really cool little app worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely.
And that is our show. We just need to do our quiz results. Andrew, do you want to kick off with the first one?
So the first question was, Blue Label Telecom said this week they'll buy which handset distributor for $1.9 billion. And the answer there, of course, is 3G Mobile.
The second question, SA's two new stock markets are engaged in a legal brawl. What are they called? And the answer there is ZARX, ZARX, and 4AX.
Our third question, Cell C has a new chief financial officer. Who is he? And for a bonus point, who is he replacing? The new CFO is Tyrone Sundarji, and he's replacing Robert Paisley.
So the fourth question was former SABC COO. Is he former? Oh, yes, he is.
Yeah, former.
Claudie Motsening this week asked congregants of a church in Katlehong to pray for what happens. And the answer there is that he becomes the president of South Africa.
That's my word. And the last question. State-owned airline SAA's board reportedly wants which Vodacom executive as its new CEO? The answer there is Vianney Jarana.
And that's our show for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us on Talk Central, and we'd love to have you back again. It's been a great discussion today.
Oh, thanks very much, Daniel.
Until next time, from all of us, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
Cheers.